Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, I'm Chris Wynn and welcome to the Roker Report Extra Podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen as we hesitantly look ahead to Sunderland's clash with Doncaster at the Stadium Light on Saturday. So rather than have our usual panel, which I'm sure would have descended into another rant on our defeat to Shrewsbury in midweek, we have a friend of the pod who, by virtue of being raised a stone's throw from Roker Park and being a season ticket holder at Sunderland for many years, is an expert on both sides of this fixture. He's followed Doncaster Rovers since 2006 for the Doncaster Free Press and has also featured in such publications as the Scottish Sun, Yorkshire Post, Sheffield Star and the Sunderland Echo, which I've just been informed of. We are, of course, very pleased to be joined by Paul Goodwin. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks very much, Chris. Lovely intro. I quite fancied a rant, actually. Obviously leading me down a different path, but yeah, plenty going on, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, when we get on the Sunderland stuff, you get into rant mode, because I'll tell you what I did on the pod during midweek. So.
Well, it's a tough shift at the minute, isn't it, being a Sunderland fan? Yeah. In lockdown as well, blimey.
It is. That's a good way to put it, a tough shift. But how are you keeping at the moment? You all right?
Yeah, good. I think, like most people, like ourselves, I think the sport is making a massive difference. A live sport, waking up, watching a bit of test cricket, a bit of horse racing, a bit of football, it's keeping us going. But like you say, the bits and bobs of Sunderland I have seen, it's been a really tough watch. Like, it's hard work, and that's not enjoyable. And we'll come on to talking about Doncaster in depth, but one of the things I was going to raise initially was that I enjoy watching Rovers. They've put a team together which are enjoyable to watch. I watched Sunderland, those two games on Sky. I was struggling, Chris. I was struggling big time.
Yeah, we'll get into that, because, like you said, watching Sunderland has been an absolute chore this year.
That's it,
It really has, especially £10 a pop. But just before we get into it, I mean, I had this down as your second time on our pod, but you think it might be more than that?
It might be my second or my third. It also blends into it. My memory's fading, I think, the older I get. But we're joking before we came on air. Yeah, I tend to come on here and, in the past, I've really bigged up Doncaster. I think they have got a good reputation for playing football the right way. They play really nice football to watch. I've come on here a few times and bigged them up, and they've never really delivered against Sunderland for whatever reason. There's a few theories. Perhaps Sunderland are a bit more physical. The physicality might not help Doncaster. But yeah, the Stadium of Light, being up there, and Doncaster have failed to deliver a couple of times.
And a lot's happened since, to be fair. The obvious one being kind of a small matter of a pandemic, which we've already kind of touched on. I mean, with your job being all about speaking to people and getting backgrounds on stories and things, I mean, how difficult has it made your role and how you do your job?
Not having sport has been a major problem. My job's slightly different now in that I'm less involved with the football side and a lot more with the other sport, community sport, amateur sport that's going on. And obviously it's been a complete washout during these lockdowns, no sport going on. So I'm having to look, you know, for alternative stuff to make sure that our coverage continues. But we've kind of teamed together, and there's enough things going on around sport. You know, you can always talk about sport, different angles to keep things ticking over. But it's certainly become a major thing, hasn't it? In terms of just, I think people's mental health is such a massive thing now, and it certainly helps me having the sport on. And again, which lends us into the whole Sunderland thing and how difficult it has become to watch that. And it's a shame, isn't it, really? It's really sad that people aren't getting the satisfaction and the enjoyment out of it. The Sunderland fans really are being shortchanged at the moment. It's a sad state of affairs, really. I'll try and keep this upbeat as I can. That's moving on to Doncaster.
Yeah, if you'd heard me on the post Shrewsbury pod, I was a lot worse than that. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a toss of a coin whether it actually has been a good thing or not for people's mental health when it comes to Sunderland that we've actually started up again. But but I mean, if we kind of touch on kind of Doncaster Rovers first, I mean, when I was looking back at the last few seasons, it's kind of been a bit of a kind of rise of Doncaster Rovers since they came back into League One 2018. First year they finished 15th, kind of getting used to life in League One. But since then, I mean, because they came third in League Two, so they didn't storm League Two, you know, roller coaster it. But since then, they've kind of suddenly leapt into a club that you almost kind of expect to be in the mix in terms of being top six year after year in League One.
Yeah.
Something they're repeating kind of this season. But it's been done against, like, you know, a backdrop of losing managers and top scorers. So, I mean, kind of what's the secret? Are they just a well-run club, or is that a bit of luck along the way?
Yeah, essentially, that's probably, you've hit the nail on the head, a very well-run club. And the gentleman in charge, Terry Bramall, was the big man at Keepmoat PLC, the building firm. So he's literally sort of put the building blocks in place, if you like. A very sensible, a very shrewd man. He doesn't take many risks, but he wants things done properly. He wants the job done properly. He's a very sort of, sensible guy with big morals, you know, looks to employ the right kind of people. And I think when they went down to League Two, ultimately they got a bit of a shock there. It was a bit of a plummet from the days where they were in the Championship under Sean O'Driscoll. They sort of running up and up, and it reached a point where they had to slip down and rebuild again. And that season in League Two, that they rebuilt under Darren Ferguson. And what Fergie did, I think he was a very sort of professional manager, and he raised the standards at the club in terms of the quality of the training, the quality of the signings. And from that point, they've just gradually built on it and built on it. I think Grant McCann came in, and he sort of rode on the coattails of what Fergie put in place, if you like. Grant McCann, he sort of came in with an attitude of, we'll go for it, we'll be a bit more positive in the way that we play, we'll be a bit more ruthless. And he brought a couple of young loan lads in Herbie Kane and Malik Wilkes, who really hit the ground running. And the team sort of overachieved that season, reaching the playoffs, almost getting to the final. It was almost a Doncaster Sunderland final, which would have left me in all sorts of trouble, I think. but they just missed out, losing to Charlton in the playoff semi-final. Grant McCann moves on, and then they pull a bit of a rabbit out of the hat, really, by bringing in Darren Moore, who has done an absolutely phenomenal job, really, to continue the good work. And while they've managed to bring in a figurehead like Darren, who's a great guy, absolutely great guy, he used to play for Doncaster during his playing career, so he's really popular with the fans, a meticulous kind of manager. But what they've done is, while they were able to get him in, they've built up behind the scenes. So they brought in a recruitment guy from Shrewsbury, Adam Henshaw, who's really raised the bar in terms of recruitment. They've also got a sort of club Doncaster model, if you like, where they're a bit umbrella with the Doncaster Bells and the rugby team. And they're able to generate revenue through that side of things as well. So there's kind of like a business element to the club as well, and a charity foundation. So as a club, it's just, I think what I'm ultimately trying to say is they've just kind of built on it and got stronger and stronger and stronger. They're not big spenders. They're not big payers in this league. There's teams with far bigger resources: Sunderland, Hull, Portsmouth, Ipswich. But I think what they've done is they've built a real kind of family, community-oriented club. And through the values of that, you know, the togetherness, team spirit, they've got something quite good going on here. And Darren Moore, like I say, he's been brilliant in terms of what he's done this season. Like you say, during a pandemic, not even the most optimistic of Doncaster fans would have expected the club to have been in this position. I think that they might have hoped to have challenged for a playoff place, but they're in with a genuine shout if they can keep it going. They didn't play well against Fleetwood this midweek. They lost quite badly, actually. It was a really poor performance, but they've been on a fantastic run. Winning games for fun, really, over the last few weeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, just on Darren Moore, because, I mean, it was kind of summer, I think it was July 2019 he took over from Grant McCann after he went to Hull, like you said. But, I mean, at the time, I mean, I remember thinking, you know, he was unlucky to lose his job at West Brom.
Yeah.
Did a decent job there. He had them kind of, you know, looking like they were going to get promoted and then kind of got sacked towards the end there. And it was only, I think it was only about a month or so, or a couple of months or after that, losing his job at the Hawthorns, where he got the Doncaster job. It seemed like a bit of a coup at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, was everyone surprised that they got him? Because, I mean, I had him.
Yeah.
I would have said, oh, well, he'll wait for a championship job to come along and pick one of those.
Pleasantly surprised. I think having that connection with the club from the past, you know, he was loved here by the... They loved him. They loved him as a big defender who gave his all for the club. And I think he saw that emotional connection and just thought it was a great chance to get back into work quickly. I think some managers... You know, if you stay too long out of the game, you can quickly be forgotten. And so he saw it as a perfect opportunity to get his foot back in the door. And there's a nice little project to work on here. You know, it, like I say, it's not just the football club. There are other elements to what's going on here. It's a big project. There is a really good feel about the place. A lot of good people involved at the club. And Darren Moore as well, he's the perfect kind of ambassador for that, I feel like, as well, because yeah. He is such a good guy, so well respected. He fits absolutely perfectly. Obviously, if he doesn't get Doncaster promoted this season, then I think there are going to be clubs sniffing around in the summer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, just looking at last season, I mean, obviously last season kind of was abandoned. Doncaster had games in hand. They were hovering just outside the playoffs. I mean, it sounds like even though they didn't make the playoffs, I mean, obviously they lost John Marcus as well at the beginning of that season. I mean, it sounded like, you know, that people thought he did a decent job even though they didn't make the playoffs.
Definitely. It was kind of following on nicely, I think, from the team that Grant McCann put together. What they have here, they do tend to have a high turnover of players every summer. So it's almost a case of rebuilding every summer. And I think probably a lot of clubs are going to be in a similar boat this summer, given the pandemic and the situation with finances. But what they do as well at Doncaster as well is utilise the loan market brilliantly, which I'm sure we'll talk more about as we talk about the current team. But last season, yes, he just put together another good team. And I think it was just around the time that the season was curtailed that things were really actually starting to click into gear. They picked up Jacob Ramsey from Aston Villa, he's just signed a new contract at Villa today, I think. Looks a player. He was sort of really coming into his own. And there was the feeling was that Doncaster, I think, probably would have nicked in the playoffs if last season had continued.
I mean, it's interesting you said that. I mean, I was going to touch on, because I was looking at all the business they did in the summer and I couldn't quite believe, you know, the turnover that happened in the summer. So, I mean, how do expectations fall after they do that every summer? So at the beginning of the season, once all the business was done, what were the expectations for Doncaster this season?
I think people are getting used to the way that they do the business. It wasn't everyone's cup of tea in terms of the way they use the loan market. They bring in a lot of loans, but they use the good reputation of the club, if you like, to build good relationships with Premier League clubs, and they do. It does give them access to a really high quality of player, which you otherwise wouldn't be able to afford. In terms of expectations, I think Doncaster fans want to see their team pushing to be in that top six every season. I think that's probably where they want to be. The club, I think, budget themselves to be around that sixth spot. They say that their budget is around the sixth, sort of seventh, eighth, ninth best budget in the league. Now, of course, this season, again, is totally alien. Mm. The financial situation was quite grim, actually, at Doncaster in the summer. They had to lay quite a number of admin staff off, if you like. So, again, that is really further evidence of just how well they've managed to do this season in terms of on the pitch to be where they are. And in these circumstances is really, it's great work from Darren Moore, his staff and the players as well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, looking at the table, you know, sitting in fifth, but two or three games in hand over the teams above them, only sitting a point behind Hull, but they've got three games in hand. I was looking as well earlier in the season. I mean, their form seemed to be slightly kind of inconsistent up to around, actually looking at it, the last time they faced Sunderland at the end of November, which, would you believe it, Sunderland drew ones each.
Yeah.
Which Sunderland seemed to like doing for the last 33 years. But since then, they've won 10 out of the last 13 in League One. I mean, around that time, did something change in terms of tactics or personnel, or did they just start getting the results that their performances warranted?
I think it might be the case that they're rebuilding the whole squad every season. It does take maybe a little bit of time to click into gear, but from what I remember, that they did actually start the season probably very well, surprisingly well, given that turnover. And then I think, similar to last season, they went through a phase actually where teams found them out a little bit. What opposing teams were doing, including Sunderland, were almost man-marking Ben Whiteman. And he was really the central man. Everything goes through him. He would sit in front of the back four and dictate the play. And opposing teams were becoming wise to it, if you like, and trying to cut Ben Whiteman out of the game. So I think they had a little bit of a phase where they had to kind of work through that and try and find alternative ways of getting by that. And then all of a sudden, whether it was that Sunderland game or not, they've gone on a brilliant run. But I just think it's they've got a very strong identity in the way that they play. They're very well coached, not just by Darren Moore. They've got a guy, Jamie Smith, on the coaching staff who was a fullback at Wolves, I think, in his playing days. He may or not remember him. They're a very well-coached team, and they're very well-organised. They just know their roles. They know what they're doing. The manager puts a lot of faith into his players, and it was just working, you know. Momentum gathered, confidence gained. And, yeah, you were going into games thinking, yeah, really confident here. They're going to pick up a result. And what is it now? Nine wins from the last 11 games. That's some run, really, when they've had a lot of players out injured as well. So they're in a great position. Whether they can maintain it for top two, I'm not too sure. You'd be really disappointed now if they finish outside the top six. But yeah, it's a great position to be in.
Yeah. You talk about that run as well, but they've taken the opportunity to actually strengthen in January. I mean, on paper, when I was looking, it seemed like a fairly successful January window. I mean, I saw Scott Robertson, I think, from Celtic, Omar Bogle, Josh Sims, which looks like an important signing from Southampton, Matt Smith. And John Bostock as well, which is quite interesting. But are Doncaster quite pleased with their business during the window?
Considering they've lost Ben Whiteman, who was such a star man, he was the key man, really. Considering you've lost him in January and you're coming out of the window feeling like you've had a good window is quite incredible. And credit to the club, you know, in these difficult times, they've not just used that Ben Whiteman money to fill like a black hole left by COVID. They could have easily, you know, just use that money to plug the gaps in the finances this season. They've gone out, they've invested, they've brought in even more loan players. They've actually got 7 loan players now. You're only allowed 5 in the squad. I know a couple of them are out injured at the minute, so it works okay. And like you say, they've gone out and got Omar Bogle on an 18-month deal, John Bostock on an 18-month deal. He'll bring a bit of experience, a bit of know-how to the group. So it's fairly encouraging. And like I say, a few of those players have been missing during this run of form. So if you think if you can bring those players back in, that does give you plenty of optimism for the remainder of the season. And yeah, Josh Sims is the one you'd pick out of the names that you've just mentioned. He's far too good for this level. They've done brilliantly to get him back.
Yeah,
he picked up a hamstring injury. And I think everybody just thought, well, that's it, Josh. Well, thanks for the service. You'll be off to a Championship club. But it's indicative, really, I think, of the kind of environment at Rovers that he thinks it's best for his career to come and maybe finish the job here and get a promotion on his CV. He's obviously enjoyed himself under the manager and the environment of the club. So that, I think, that is a good indication of the sort of feeling that you get within the club here.
Yeah, on the face of it, it seems like a daft thing to do. Take him away from somewhere where he's enjoying it to, you know, risk putting him in somewhere where he's not going to enjoy his football, or the player with a defensive style that, you know, doesn't let him do what he wants to do. But I was surprised, because obviously, I mean, when you see him for Southampton, you know he's a player.
Yeah.
On the odd occasion, but a fantastic bit. Matt Smith as well, centre midfielder. He seems like a good signing as well.
Very good, and he's come into his own since Ben Whiteman moved on. Somebody really had to step up to the plate in that. They play either a 4-1-4-1 or a 4-2-3-1, and the style is very much passing through the thirds, play out from the back, and they'll stick to that religiously. They'll stick to it. They'll stick to the game plan. So they needed somebody to effectively replace Whiteman. And yeah, Matt Smith's put his hand up, and he's really shown actually over the last month or so why he's already an international player with Wales. He's really done well with his range of passing, and he's tenacious. He can get about the pitch, and there's a really nice blend in that midfield. So yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say he's quite young as well. He's only 22, 23,
yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, young lads. And this is what I'm saying about the kind of play with no fear. And this is why I enjoy watching them. You know, there's no fear in their approach. That they're good technical players. They've got a way of playing and they stick to it. And yeah, it makes a bit of a when you compare it with what's going on at Sunderland, it's a very interesting contrast, actually.
Yeah, we've still got that to come. But actually, I wanted to touch quickly on John Bostock, actually, because it made us feel a little bit old when I looked him up. And he wasn't even in his 30s yet, which I found quite incredible. He's come back to England after 7 years of playing in various places in Europe. I mean, it looks like a clever piece of business, but I mean, I haven't seen him play for probably a decade, best part of a decade. So, I mean, is he slotted in nicely?
You're the same as most of us. It's a great name, isn't it? A real sort of Championship manager name, if you like, from the good old days. he certainly comes across like a good guy. He's got his own YouTube channel, believe it or not. He's very very forward in terms of his media work, but he seems intent on coming in and making a good impression. And like I say, I think just having that little bit of experience that he'll bring will be useful. He looks short in match fitness at the minute. He played against Fleetwood during midweek and he looked a little bit off the pace, but technically strong on the ball. He gives Doncaster a bit more physicality as well. He's a big lad. On paper, it looks like a pretty good addition.
You mentioned it before, and I saw, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks back now, that Darren Moore seemed to be heavily linked with Sheffield Wednesday. Was there any kind of truth in that? Was it all rumours? And is it going to be a constant concern when Championship jobs come up that Darren Moore's name is going to be linked to it?
From what I understand, I don't think there was much in that at all. I think that was a bit of pure speculation and a bit of paper talk. Sheffield Wednesday, I think at the moment, are ticking over with their caretaker manager. They're getting results, and I think they'll leave it be for the time being. Whether that vacancy comes up in the summer, like I say, it might be a different kettle of fish. But Darren Moore, I think he's the kind of man, he's very loyal, and I think he'll want to see this job through at least to the end of the season and see what he can do with it. It is a worry, and it's, you know, it's happened. They have had to change manager quite frequently over the last few years, and you don't really want to be having to do that too often. But I suppose it reflects where Doncaster are as a club. They're at a certain level, but obviously bigger clubs can come along and pay X amount of money, and they are going to lure certain players and managers away, unfortunately, unless Rovers can get into that Championship, the promised land.
Yeah, you never know. But he does seem quite a loyal fella.
Yeah, really.
It would actually surprise me if he jumped ship. But
yeah, at this point, definitely. We'll see where we're at in the summer. I'm pretty nervous about that, I have to say. I think it's inevitable. If he does well at Doncaster, if he gets a top six finish, it's inevitable that big clubs are going to take notice.
Yeah, it comes with the territory of doing well, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, looking at, I mean, obviously we mentioned Marcus who left just when Moore took the job. But I mean, looking at goal scorers now, Okenabiri, I don't know whether I've pronounced that right.
Close.
I've had
a
go at it, but he appears to be the danger man this season. 10 goals in all competitions. But I mean, he seems a very different player to what Marcus was, and Marcus was that kind of point person for years for Doncaster.
Yeah.
But I mean, has that been like taking some getting used to, because he seems to have been the kind of the one up front, but he seems to be more someone who gets in behind rather than do what Marcus did.
Yeah, where do I start with Okanabiri? He's a very different type of player. Marcus used to absolutely run his socks off in terms of his work ethic, and he brought that element to the team. He's a bit of a sort of nasty piece of work, if you like, winding people up. But he got his fair share of goals as well, didn't he? So all round, he was a fantastic signing for the club. Okenabiri, initially, I didn't think he was a natural sort of goal scorer, but he has come up with some very nice finishes recently. And when he gets the service, he is a very capable finisher. He holds the ball up quite well for the team. He just generally does a fairly steady job, but doesn't sort of catch the eye, I think, as much as John Marcus maybe did. I felt a little bit of sympathy for Okenabiri, actually. At the start of the season, he was dropped. He was dropped for the first game in favour of a young loan lad that they brought in, which was a big call from from Moy. He's played a lad called Tyrese John-Jules, who they've got on loan from Arsenal. And technically, you can see he's a very, very promising player with a bit of physical stature about him as well. But then, he got injured, John-Jules. He's been a bit injury-prone. He's out injured again currently. And Okanabiri's come in and he's done well. He's done well for the team. But the problem that Rovers have got is they haven't got any other strikers in reserve. So he's having to play almost every single minute up top. And it's been a bit of a graveyard shift for him, actually. He's had his work cut out this season. But yeah, in terms of a goal return, he's doing quite well.
One other player I wanted to mention was the Doncaster Rovers attacking midfielder, Reece James. The more I thought about it, the more kind of made sense of the type of player he actually is, you know, especially when I read he seems lately to have been deployed kind of on the left of the three behind the striker. But I did notice that in the Sunderland squad, only Charlie Wyke has actually scored more goals this season than Reece James.
There's a stat to put things into context. Yeah, he's a good footballer and he's a good lad, Reece. I think he's like a popular member of the squad, very sort of laid back character, gets on with people, just gets on with his job. And he's probably a better footballer than actually people maybe at Sunderland thought. And Darren Moore, again, has shown a lot of trust in him. And he's stuck him in a central midfield position. And he's thrived in the role. He's done a really steady job. Technically, he's held his own. He's a mobile lad as well. He can get about the pitch. And yeah, adaptability. And it's been one of the themes of this season, really, from a Doncaster perspective, that, like I say, they've got this formation. And I think every player in the squad knows what's required in every role. So Moore has been able to play players out of position, and he's been able to move players around and fill in when they've had injuries. And that has really helped, I think, galvanise the squad. It's helped because they've only got a small squad. So Reece James, for instance, has played at left back, left midfield, centre midfield. The right back, Brad Halliday, he's played on the right wing. He's played as a defensive central midfielder. Okanabiri has played as a central striker and he's played out wide. So it's kind of a theme of the season, really, that the players have been fantastic, the way that they've adapted to it. And Darren Moore's put a lot of trust in his players and they've delivered the goods.
Yeah, you're making us feel a little bit better about Max Power at right back at the minute. So that's But we'll come on to Sunderland now. And I don't know if this point, Paul, you want to kind of keep your journalist hat on, or whether you want to put your fan hat on, or what, if you want to try and be objective about Sunderland, which is probably difficult. We're at home on Saturday and we've won 4 and lost 4 out of 13 at the stadium alike this season, which puts us 14th on the table based on home form, which is pretty incredible. And I've noticed actually Doncaster's home record is actually pretty kind of fantastic this term. I mean, is it just a season for weird anomalies like our home record, because without the fans and things?
I know.
Or do League One opposition still look at Sunderland as a big scalp?
Oh, yeah. Without doubt. Without doubt, teams are going up to the stadium a lot and they're raising the game, aren't they? They're raising the game. Mm. They're loving it. It's like you get into that ground as a League One player and it's like a cup final, isn't it? And you can see, I think, in terms of some of the celebrations from the opposing players when they score at the Stadium of Light, you can see they're loving it. I think the Gillingham game springs to mind there, the celebrations there when they got that last gasp equaliser. But that's something Sunderland players have got to live with, you know. That's part of the territory of being a Sunderland player. You've got to deal with that. And I genuinely thought this season, you know, the fans have been blamed in the past, haven't they, for the poor home record. Well, you can't blame the fans anymore. And I don't know, it just, does it expose that the flaws in the squad even more? Does it expose that the flaws under Phil Parkinson and now under Lee Johnson? Because there's no excuses, really. There's no hiding place now. And like you say, that home record there, what is it, four wins from
13. Yeah, four wins from 13.
That's appalling. I mean, you're not going up. You're not going to win automatic promotion with home form like that.
No, I mean, with obviously covering Doncaster, I don't know if you get to actually see many Sunderland games, or whether you have two streams on the go at the same time.
occasionally, but I think it's been a blessing in disguise that obviously I have to keep an eye on Doncaster more, and more often than not there is a clash, so I don't get to see Sunderland as much as you guys, which might be a blessing. The games that I have seen on Sky, and I think there was a Fleetwood game earlier in the season, and it's been real struggle, a real chore to watch. And it's just, like I say, I think before we came out, it's just an interesting contrast with this Doncaster team. They've got very much an identity, a way of playing. They've got a bit of flair up top. They've got a bit of pace. And I think Sunderland are moving towards that. I think that's exactly what Lee Johnson wants to bring in. He wants to see that energy up top, that dynamism that we're really lacking. But I think he's slowly starting to realise now, I think what he's let himself in for, it's looking like a huge job to turn this around. And the sooner we get the new owners in, the better, really. And it's going to be a massive window in the summer. Let's see what we can do this season. I think we'll be lucky to scrape the playoffs, to be honest, this season. And then it's a huge rebuilding job in the summer for me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, midweek was a shambles at Shrewsbury. Speaking to people at home and stuff, do you get a sense of just how bad we've been recently?
Just the depressing conversations about it, to be honest. Yeah, it is. It's just a bit gloomy. And yeah, I listen to the lads on Radio Newcastle quite a lot. Like, that keeps me in touch with what's going on. And I just find it really, really quite sad, to be honest. Because, I started watching Sunderland, it was the late 80s. So I saw the road to Wembley, the cup final season, and then those great seasons, the final few seasons at Roker Park, and then obviously the momentum that went with the move to the Stadium of Light, and fantastic times. But it feels almost like you're being really nostalgic and living in the past now, because the club has been in a black hole for the best part of a decade really now. And I just worry now, Chris, that the kind of that losing mentality is... it's broken the club to a certain extent, and we've got to rebuild it. We're rebuilding it from scratch, and I'm really fearful that we're going to be stuck in this division for a while longer yet, because I do just think there are serious issues, perhaps some of them lurking underneath the surface, and it's in a real mess, and it needs sorting out drastically, and I wish Lee Johnson and the new owner all the best with it, because it's a huge job.
I think they're going to need that. Talking about the job, I mean, they've getting on with it in January, done some business, of course. Looking at the business being done across League One, how do you rate what business we've done? You know, Winchester coming in from Forest Green, Ross Stewart, Jake Vawkins, Jordan Jones, as well as kind of Will Grigg and Danny Graham leaving the club.
Yeah, I was pleased to see those two go. I think you've got to try and move on in a different direction. But the jury's out, really. The jury's out on signings like Winchester, and I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced at all. And I think, to a certain extent, the club have been limited by the wage cap, haven't they, this time around, which, of course, those goalposts are moving as we speak. So there might be room in the summer to do something a bit more and set the bar a bit higher in terms of the quality of the signings. Yeah, it's just almost like you want to start from scratch. I think my own worry is there's a real mentality issue, if you like, because for me the best team this season in League One, the best team that I've seen is Lincoln, and yet Sunderland have gone down there and won 4-0, which says to me that we've got the ability on paper, we've got the ability to do a lot better than what we are doing. So I start to wonder whether there's a serious kind of mentality issue behind the scenes. Is there a real drive for success behind the scenes? Are people really, you know, busting the balls to succeed for this club? Or is there kind of an acceptance of mediocrity? Has the club got into a bit of a mess? Because from what I saw on Netflix, I saw a bit of a cultural problem there, and it wasn't just the playing side of things, it was on the admin side of things as well. And for me, that the club needs basically to wipe the slate clean and start from scratch again.
Yeah. Well, actually, I've been talking about that Lincoln game. I mean, we could have easily been 2-0 down in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we got a couple of goals, which meant kind of their heads went down. And I mean, it's just one of them seasons, I think, where, with fans not being there, the odds... kind of strange result just crops up now and again.
That's true. But what a difference as well it makes when, if Sunderland, well, I say that, it didn't work last, but if we get the first goal and teams have to come out and they open up and then we can take advantage of the gaps that leaves. And I think that happened at Lincoln. Lincoln are an open team that will come out and play and they left the gaps for Sunderland to go and completely destroy them. This scenario of just constantly drawing games and not putting games to bed is just, for me, that's indicative of a more maybe underlying issue there's something just not quite right, is that for it to keep happening and keep happening again and again and again, it's just not right and it's just not good enough.
Well, I mean, we're talking about new eras and all of that sort of stuff. We're expecting or hoping, fingers crossed, the takeover to be confirmed any day now, which we've been seeing since Christmas. Kirill Lewis-Dreyfus, taking over from Stuart Donald. What are your thoughts on that takeover? I mean, we're assuming that it's going to go through at some point. But, I mean, we're talking about the salary cap and the ruling, you know, that's not going to be coming into force in the way that they wanted it to come into force. Can he make an impact quite quickly within kind of a summer window?
He'd have to be given this summer, like you say, the salary cap, that is a potential game changer, isn't it, as far as we're concerned, as far as Sunderland are concerned. That could really change things and just give us a bit more room for manoeuvre in terms of investment. Not that sort of throw on the checkbook has done us any favours in the past. I don't think that's the answer to all of our problems. Again, I think there are fundamental things that need to be improved. And from what I've heard of Speakman, I've listened to a bit of him, and they're saying all the right things, aren't they? They're saying all the right things about the structure of the club and the academy, but there's an awful lot to be sorted out. And I think Sunderland fans now are really teetering on the brink. You can only see so much and hear the so much. You want to see it on the pitch, and there's got to be that. We've got to start seeing evidence of that on the pitch. But I would urge people to get off Lee Johnson's back for starters this season. I think he's walked into an absolute minefield, really. Let's see what he can do. Make the best of a bad job this season. Let's see if we can sneak in the playoffs and take it from there. And if it's not to be this season, then really, we've got to hope next season is the start of a bright new era.
We'll end on that positive note on Sunderland. But back to Saturday. Doncaster ticking along nicely, as we said. Tucked in behind the leaders with games in hand. Do you think this is a bigger game for Sunderland with the emphasis on them to go out and get 3 points than it is for Doncaster to get the result?
I think it's a big game for both teams, given where they are in the league. I know what you mean for Sunderland. They've got to start winning games, haven't they? Not just winning the odd game here or there. They've got to start putting a run together, a serious run together to get in, not just in top, you know, we're not just talking automatic, but just to get in the playoffs, they've got to start putting a run together. Yeah. But for Doncaster, they're coming into this game on the back of a little bit of a concerning run. Not too concerning. You can't say that really after 9 wins out of 11, but they played poorly against Fleetwood and they got results actually against Lincoln and Oxford in the games previous to that. They managed to beat them, but they were very much backs to the wall performances where they didn't really dominate the ball like they used to, but they found a way of grinding out wins. So the form, the way that they like to impose themselves on the game, that's just kind of dipped over the last 3 games. So that they're going to Sunderland just needing to arrest that and just need to address a couple of issues really and get back to a good level of performance. So it's again, you could Doncaster. I've seen them at the Stadium of Light where they completely went into the shells and were like rabbits in the headlights 1 year. And then I think the following season they went up there and defended quite for their lives and dug out a 0-0 draw. But I think you'll get a Doncaster team who are well up for it on Saturday, and they'll dig in, show a lot of determination. No doubt it'll end 1-1. Like.
my next kind of note I had was to say that Saturday is like screams out that it's going to be a 1-1.
Definitely.
I mean, because it's a psychology's interesting, isn't it? You know, the positions of the clubs.
Yeah.
I think Doncaster will be more than happy to come up, get a draw.
Yeah, they'll not play for a draw. They're not the sort of team who'll go out and purposefully play for a draw. They might start the game sort of tentatively and, you know, make sure they do the basics right and get, but they'll not sit there with 10 men behind the ball all game, I wouldn't have thought. They'll try and express themselves. And they've got young players who are capable of producing a bit of magic as well. We've not really mentioned Taylor Richards, who's on loan from Brighton, but he's genuinely one to watch. He's got a bit of class about him and he can produce something out of nothing. So they are capable, Donny, of going up there and getting a result. In fact, from a Sunderland supporting perspective, actually, this is probably the most nervous I've been in terms of Donny might be able to pull this off this time. Just because they have got something up their sleeve in terms of being able to produce a bit of quality. I don't think Josh Sims is fit enough yet. I don't think he'll feature, but they have got it in the locker, and it'll be an interesting game.
Yeah. So I assume you're watching it on the stream like the rest of us.
I imagine so. Yeah.
It's a shame. I imagine this one, your hand would have went straight up. You would have been kind of up the M1 or the A1.
Well, that's it. I usually go up, make a bit of a weekend of it. I stayed in the Hilton last time. Absolutely loved that. You know, catching up with mates, night out after the game. It's a different world we're living in at the minute, isn't it? And so I think I'll just stay at home and watch it on the web.
Yeah. So I assume with both your fan hat and your journalist hat on, you're going for 1-1 on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty safe bet, isn't it? If Sunderland are involved, and like you said, yeah. I think a draw would be seen as a decent outcome for Donny, given the slip up against Fleetwood, just to get back on track. So yeah, 1-1, nailed on.
Yeah, I'm going to check the odds as soon as we finish up here, I think. But yeah, I hope you enjoy your Saturday afternoon watching the game regardless. And that just leaves me to say thank you very much for your time, Paul. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, cheers, Chris. Good to hear the accent again, and thanks for having me on again.
Good stuff. We'll try and check it out and see if we can sort something out for your hat-trick appearance, whether it's next time or whether this was it. But thanks for joining us there. Thanks again for that.
Lovely stuff. Cheers, Chris. All the best.
Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Look out for Dower Player Ratings pods that should drop soon after the final whistle. But from us, it's bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.